Welcome back to Nighttime Live on the Mighty 790 KFGO. I'm Bob Harris, along with Scott Sorum. I'm going to be here with you until 10 o'clock tonight. And we've got a very interesting book that is out now called Mob Boss, The Life of Little Al DiArco, the man who brought the mafia down. And joining us right now is one of the co-authors, Jerry Capisi. Jerry has been a long-time crime writing book, six of them, I should say, six true crime books. Also is the editor of ganglandnews.com. He wrote it with Tom Robbins, getting the actor mixed up. Sorry about that. And he joins us right now here on KFGO. Jerry Capisi, appreciate you joining us here in Fargo.
It's a pleasure, Bob. Nice to chat with you.
So, Little Al DiArco, how important of a man was he? Because he brought down a lot of people after he turned himself in, right?
He sure did, Bob. It's hard to weigh guys from different eras, but after Joe Valachi, my sense is that Al DiArco was the most important cooperating witness ever to switch sides and decide to work for his Uncle Sam instead of the mob. Like you said, there were more than 50 gangsters were convicted and went to prison, some for life because of Al's decision to flip. And I think it really he also helped trigger kind of an avalanche of other gangsters who decided to flip and switch sides and basically cooperate with the government.
I'll say it because it's nighttime radio. This is a hell of a book, and I want to know how you got involved with it. How did you get the name Al DiArco, and how did it come to you to write?
Well, it started 10 years ago, Bob, but that's when I decided that he would be a great story to do. His life would be a great story to tell. And I tried to reach out to him through a law enforcement official and was unsuccessful in getting him to agree to do a book. But a couple of years ago, he reached out to me through another law enforcement official and said that at this time he was willing to sit down and tell his story. He's in the autumn of his years. He's 81 right now, Bob. And I think that's what triggered his change of heart. I got a hold of Tom Robbins, who, I've worked with many times in the past. We decided that it would be a great book to tell. Each of us had seen Al on the witness stand, and we knew how good a witness he was in telling the details of certain crimes that he'd committed and things that he'd heard. And we knew he'd be a fascinating story. And so we agreed to do his book. One of the key caveats we gave Al was that we would write the book, it would be our book, and that he agreed that he would answer any question that we asked, and he also agreed that he would have no say-so on what we decided to use and what we decided to keep out of the book. So, with all those factors in place, we decided it would be a hell of a story, as you just said, to tell, and we went after it.
Jerry, I have to ask you, too, when you do a book like this, and you hear from a man who has not had the best reputation, obviously, as far as crime is concerned, did you have to do a lot of fact-checking from what you heard from Al DiArco?
Oh, no question about it, Bob, but that's one of the things that made it, such a fascinating story to us the more we got into it. We did not catch him in a lie. And one of the really intriguing things is, he started to talk to us about crimes that he heard about that were committed in 1968. He said, there was this guy I was running around with, little Davey Patillo. He was a close associate of Lucky Luciano. And in 1968, he killed this guy, Frankie Salzberg, and he did it up in Van Cortlandt Park in the Bronx, one of the northern boroughs of the city of New York. And I said, Tom, I said, how are we ever going to find this? And we couldn't. There was no story written about the case. But after searching through some medical examiner's records, we definitely confirmed that it did happen. And it was one of the things that convinced us that, he had a great memory. And, when he said something, it was something that he believed to true blue. He didn't gild a lily, so to speak. And he, one of the things that the prosecutors told us and FBI agents told us was that they couldn't get him to say things that they thought happened and that he was pretty sure happened because, you know, he didn't see it happen. He said, you know, I'm pretty sure he did it, but I never heard that he did do it, and he never told me he did it, so I'm not going to say he did it.
You know, through the book, several times it's mentioned that Al DiArco was a one-woman man, and that is so turned around from what we actually know or actually have seen in the movies and through stories. But he had his wife, and that was it. That's the only woman he had, right?
That's exactly right. He's the exception that proves the rule. There aren't too many gangsters who are one-woman men, but Al was a true blue one-woman man. There's no question about it. And we did have an opportunity to speak to his wife, and she said it was basically love at first sight, and that's something that he had said also, and it was kind of an interesting thing. You know, the other really interesting thing about his decision to cooperate, and one of the things that made him such an difficult witness for the defense lawyers to undermine was the reason why he decided to cooperate. Unlike 99% of the other gangsters who decide to turn state's evidence, so to speak, Al was not under investigation and was not under indictment for any crimes. So that when he took the witness stand, he was able to say truthfully, and the government prosecutors were able to point out to the jurors, that he's not sitting up there, telling you a story to try and save his neck to keep out of prison. He went to prison a couple of times, but he's up here telling you the truth only because he became disenchanted with the mob and decided that it was time for him to flip and work for the government.
Much like Marlon Brando in The Godfather, Al really didn't like doing the drug scene for the gangsters, for the mafia. And that really upset him too, didn't it?
Yes, it did. But, you know, it did when he came out of prison and saw that it was had affected his neighborhood and that his son had become addicted to heroin. But you know, Al was a gangster, and he did concede that he was convicted back in 1983 of actually distributing heroin. And even though he went to trial and tried to beat the case, he admitted to us that he was, in fact, guilty, had done it, and he did it to try and make a buck. That's the thing about gangsters, there's just about nothing they won't do you know, to try and make a buck. And he did it pretty much anything and everything he could to make a buck when he was on that side of the street.
Jerry Capizzi, our special guest tonight here on KFGO, Mob Boss, The Life of Little Al DiArco, the man who brought down the mafia. It is co-written by Tom Robbins with Jerry. Jerry, we're just going to take just a brief break. And when we come back, I want to ask you just a couple more things about Al DiArco. And one thing that really is strange to me is that he was very concerned about a dog that he had shot. We'll talk about that in just a moment here on KFGO. Back we are, Jerry Capizzi, our special guest on KFGO, Mob Boss, The Life of Little Al DiArco, the man who brought down the mafia. It is available on Thomas Dunn Books right now, and we'll tell you more about how to get a hold of that here in just a few minutes as well. There was a crime that he listed in the book, or shown, told you in the book, where he had to drop down out of a skylight, and he had to shoot a dog. And I was really surprised at what he thought about that incident.
Yeah, he was very, very upset that he actually killed a dog to try and get into this building that he and a buddy were trying to rob. It's one of the things that he said bothered him throughout his entire career. It didn't faze him at all that he was involved in the murder plots to kill 10 different gangsters, and that he personally was involved in one murder himself, where he, you know, was bloodied all over his body because the guy just wouldn't go down. But killing the dog bothered him. His reason for feeling so down about it was because the dog didn't do anything to deserve his fate. And it was just, you know, unfortunate for this poor dog that he had to get killed. I mean, it's one of those really strange feelings that gangsters come up with for reasons that don't make any sense to me either.
Wow. Say, he did open up some legitimate businesses, though, right?
No question about it. And he ran a restaurant that became a well-known establishment in Little Italy, and one that actors like Robert De Niro and Burt Young actually visited to try and get a handle on the way gangsters operate. JFK Jr. at the time was an assistant prosecutor for the Manhattan DA's office and was a regular customer as well. An interesting development that took place on a Tuesday night. The most restaurants in the city of New York are closed on Mondays, so Al decided, well, let's open on Mondays and close on Tuesdays. But on this one particular Tuesday night, he had a meeting of between the Lucchese crime family, his crime family, and the Gambino crime family going on, and it was a private discussion. It was a major mob sit-down. And who turns up at the door but Mayor Koch, Mayor Ed Koch, and his entourage trying to get in, and knocks on the door, and Al goes out to and sees it's the mayor, and the mayor says, I'd like to come in for a restaurant, to the restaurant. We heard a lot about it. And he says, it's closed, Mr. Mayor. I'm really sorry. And here's the mayor looking in and seeing that there's food on the table and people sitting there. And he says, it's a private party, Mr. Mayor. I'm really, really sorry that I can't let you in right now.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. That's amazing. And by the way, I did read just a little smidgen, but when Robert De Niro was in, he wasn't really crazy about De Niro being there, was he?
No, he was not happy with De Niro being there. I mean, you know, most people would be, but he felt that De Niro was using his coming to the restaurant just to spy on him and other gangsters to see how they operated and how they carried themselves so that he could make use of it for his own acting career. And it bothered Al. He really had no reason to be upset about it because De Niro was paying his own way, but Al just certainly did not appreciate the fact that De Niro was helping to make his own living by sitting there and watching the way Al walked and talked as he walked around his restaurant.
By the way, little Al DeArco, I understand, too, had a dislike for John Gotti.
No question about it. He was really upset that Gotti actually brought a lot of notoriety and law enforcement presence to Little Italy. His headquarters was around the corner, a block away from Al's restaurant, and he was very upset. And one time, Vic Arena, another acting boss of another crime family, came to Al's restaurant, and Al got upset with him and says, what the hell are you doing here, Vic? You came here from Gotti's club, and how many cops did follow you here to my place? And he was not happy with John Gotti's swashbuckling attitude and the way he carried himself, because it caused a lot of problems for gangsters in Little Italy, no question about it.
The Teflon Don, if I remember the correct name.
That's what he was, and until the Teflon stuck.
One other name I wanted to bring up, because I just remember, I think it was even Geraldo Rivera had them on like every night for I don't know how many weeks, but Vincent the Chin Gigante. Now, this guy was another real character, wasn't he?
No question about it. Chin Gigante was the boss of the Genovese crime family, and he put on an act for many, many years playing the role of a crazy man. He would walk around the streets of Greenwich Village in a bathrobe and pajamas, pretending to be crazy, and it worked for many, many years. He was indicted in 1990 for a bunch of labor racketeering crimes and several murders. It took 6 years before the government could actually bring him to trial, before they were able to convince a judge that he was faking it and that could stand trial. And he was ultimately convicted. Al DeArco was one of the key witnesses against him at that trial, sentenced to 12 years in prison and died behind bars.
Al DeArco is in the Witness Protection Program. How safe is that?
It's pretty safe. There have been a couple of glitches, but none in which the participant in the program did not go back to his old neighborhood or violate the rules in some way, shape, or form. I can't remember. I don't know the specific number now, but hundreds of gangsters and others who have been put into the witness protection program since it was established in the 70s, and they haven't had a single loss of life from anyone who actually went through the program correctly.
But Sammy the Bull Gravano, they're probably rethinking that one now, huh?
Well, Sammy Bull is another case in point. He actually decided to flaunt it and actually got involved in drug dealing and was prosecuted again and is currently serving a 20-year sentence for drug trafficking after having gotten out after serving only 5 years for numerous crimes, including 19 murders.
You've been at this for more than 30 years, Jerry. What drives you to this?
Well, it just, I was a newspaper man, Bob, and it just happened that I was covering cops and robbers, first at police headquarters and then at the courthouses in Brooklyn, federal court and state court in Brooklyn. And John Gotti arrived on the scene back in the 1980s and became a household word, and I started covering his cases and his crimes, and all of a sudden the bosses over at the Daily News decided that they could use a column about the mob, and that began my gangland column back in 1989, and I went online with it in 1996, and it's been there ever since. It's something that just happened and developed along the ways. The fact that I come from New York and I'm familiar with the landscape certainly hasn't hurt me, but I try to cover it the same way any reporter covers any beat. You've got to try and talk to as many people on as many different sides of the issue as you can and tell the story as best you can.
As the years goes on, do the five families keep their names, Bonanno, Colombo, Gambino?
Well, they have maintained their names that were given to them back in 1963 when Joe Valachi flipped. When he flipped, he gave the names of the five crime families with the names of the current bosses who were leading them at the time. The only one that had changed over the years was the Profaci family has become known as the Colombo crime family. And that's because in the early 1970s, Joe Colombo, the boss of the crime family at the time, became a household word himself. He, you might remember, was instrumental in getting the word mafia taken out of the federal government and also kept the word mafia from being used in the Godfather film back in the early 1970s. Became a pretty important figure, actually picketed the FBI for a long time, claiming that the FBI was persecuting Italian Americans. And so he ended up getting the name of his crime family changed to the Colombo crime family. But they've maintained those names ever since.
I really wish we had more time, Jerry, but if I did that, I'd give away the whole book. The Mob Boss, The Life of Little Al DiArco, The Man Who Brought Down the Mafia. It's available online, obviously, bookstores. What's the best way to get it?
Well, it's like you just said, it's online. It's available online, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. If you just go to my website, there are many, many links you can get, and it should be in bookstores all over the country at this point. It's been out since October 1st, and if it's not in your bookstore right now, tell them to order it, and I'm sure they'll get it for you.
Okay, let's have that website of yours, too, again.
It's ganglandnews.com, www.ganglandnews.com.
It's a fascinating read, Jerry. I have to tell you, I can't put it down. I've got about two-thirds through it, but I am going to finish it, I promise you.
Well, I'm glad you're enjoying it, Bob. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.